The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, we're back at 710 KNUS. George Brockler with The George Show. We are about to be joined in studio. I don't know if it's COVID be damned, but I don't know. With super attorney Chris Murray. A lot of folks don't know about Chris's background. He is, I think I've described you earlier, as the token Republican in Brownstein. Are there more than
one? There are so many Republicans at Brownstein.
Is it really?
I mean,
is
it's a political law firm. Get out of here.
I know, but maybe it's just you're the most high-profile one.
Oh, I don't know. I think our former U.S. Attorney Jason Dunn would take
umbrage
with
wait
that.
A minute. Okay, I stand corrected. Yeah. I forgot that Jason rejoined the firm recently. Obviously, nobody thought that was going to happen. Nobody thought that the firm would go down that horrible road again, but they did, and they brought him back on board. Jeez, that's fantastic. They also don't know probably that Chris Murray began his career as a hand model, and then after that tragic farming accident, you ended up having to shift gears.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, thank goodness, I could still read.
That's right. And I'm glad you can, because we're here to talk about something that happened this week. Pretty big deal. And that was the Supreme Court's decision on the CDC's new eviction ban. Now, it wasn't a full-blown, and maybe I got this wrong, but it wasn't like a full-blown Supreme Court opinion that comes after a great deal of argument that you could listen to on a podcast and all these billions of pages about. I mean, tell us what happened.
Yeah, I mean, so the eviction moratorium, which has been in effect in one way or another since September, since May of 2020 and then reinstated in July of 2020, the Supreme Court basically let a lower court judgment from Alabama, a district court in Alabama, ruled that the new eviction moratorium was unconstitutional, and entered a full judgment on a full opinion and briefing and everything, and then stayed its judgment, so said, we'll leave it in place so the government can appeal. And the D.C. Circuit, or the circuit court that heard it, said, no, we'll go ahead and wait for the Supreme Court to talk. And the Supreme Court said, you go ahead and enforce your judgment, because we said back in June that this was unconstitutional. We left it in place so that because there was only about 3 weeks left on the moratorium at the time. So we left it in place to basically avoid upsetting a bunch of apple carts. And we said specifically, and by the way, in that June opinion, the court said, absent clear and specific congressional authorization via new legislation, the ban couldn't keep going. And the Biden administration did it anyway. So the Supreme Court said, normally, we'd wait for this appeal to come all the way up to us.
Sure.
But we're just telling you something that we've already told you before. So district court, go ahead and enforce your judgment.
Now, there's a couple questions that come from that. One, is the fact that we had to go down this road again and the Biden administration was able to do this the product really of just Justice Kavanaugh back in June?
Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Roberts.
And Justice Roberts. That's right.
So
that's right.
It was 5-4 in June. In June, the other four conservative justices wanted to knock the moratorium down then, because I think their point of view was they didn't say exactly why they wanted to do it, but I'm sure it was, hey, look, if it's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. It doesn't matter if we upset apple carts. That's the way it goes. Kavanaugh and Roberts, I think, both decided, well, you're supposed to consider what's called the equities when you decide whether or not to knock a statute down, especially when you're dealing with a stay of judgment. And so they said, the equities, it's only 3 weeks. It'll make it easier for it to end in an orderly fashion. And I think most importantly for our Democratic friends, it gives Congress time to pass this again
which they did not do. Now, you said knocking down a statute, and I think this wasn't necessarily knocking down a statute. This was CDC,
right,
and maybe talk about this a little bit, going back and interpreting language from a jillion months or years ago and saying, you know what, if we squint hard enough, we can actually see the power to do almost anything.
I'm at 100%. And let me, I think for your listeners, because there's the language isn't that long, I'm going to read it.
Okay,
this is the language that the CDC relied upon to say that nobody can be evicted. And by the way, massive criminal penalties if you dare evict anybody. The Surgeon General, and by the way, this is 42 U.S.C. 264A, the Surgeon General, with the approval of the Secretary of Health and Human Services, is authorized to make and enforce such regulations as in his judgment are necessary to prevent the introduction, transmission, or spread of communicable diseases from foreign countries into the states or possessions, or from one state or possession into any other state or possession.
So far, I could maybe see a stretch. Yeah, right. I mean, but yeah.
Boy, pretty broad law, right?
That's very broad.
Next. For the purposes of carrying out and enforcing such regulations, the Surgeon General may provide for such inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, destruction of animals, or articles found to be infected or contaminated as to be sources of dangerous infection to human beings, and other measures as in his judgment may be
measures,
necessary.
Other and measures, so big.
The federal government, the Biden administration, and to be fair, the Trump administration before hung on that other measures as in his judgment may be necessary to say, oh, well, we can do basically whatever the heck we want.
Yeah. That's crazy. Did the Supreme Court then, in striking this thing or letting the lower court's decision stand, did they reference, look, this is unlimited? I mean, you could interpret this to be almost anything.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that's exactly what the Supreme Court said, is that, look, you can't if you're going to have that, I mean, first I'll say there's hints in this opinion that there's something called an anti-delegation problem, right? Which the anti-delegation doctrine says Congress makes the laws, right? Congress makes the laws. The executive branch is supposed to enforce the laws.
Right.
And yes, of course, regulatory agencies, especially since the New Deal, have been allowed to adopt regulations with specific congressional direction. But if what you have done is instead said, hey, actually, guys, just go ahead and do whatever you want. We're going to be over here at a fundraiser having a bowl of peanuts. Then that violates the Constitution's design, which says only the legislative branch may make the laws. And there are hints in this opinion that that's exactly the problem that the justices saw.
Well, outside of the hints, then, what was the unconstitutional aspect of this? What did they find was unconstitutional?
Just that Congress had not authorized that. Basically, this what the Supreme Court found was, is this legislation lets you do things like inspection, fumigation, destruction of animals, not destruction of livelihoods by eliminating the ability to evict deadbeat renters.
Now, it is telling that certainly on the political side, Pelosi and Schumer and the others, their comments aren't, no, this is clearly constitutional. It's all to play on the emotional part and say, we're evicting a lot of people who are in. And I think that might be true. One, should that matter in an analysis of the law, the fact that there are going to be a bunch of people who are impacted by this negatively? And two, how does the dissent try to justify this?
Well, so one, should it matter? The answer is no. Congress knew what was going to happen, right? They were too busy working on this, $3.5 trillion.
And January 6th.
A boondoggle on January 6th. That's exactly what I mean. And which is, look, the Democrats run Congress right now. They can set their priorities. They set the calendar. They set the agenda. Kavanaugh and Roberts, along with the liberal justices, gave them a heads up and said, hey, if you want this to continue, we're giving you a little courtesy notice. Go ahead and pass a law. The Democrats decided it wasn't important enough. Cori Bush decided she should sleep out on the steps of the Capitol instead of legislating for it inside. I mean, how crazy is that, right? So the answer is no, it shouldn't matter. Now, how did the liberal justices try to justify this? It's really telling. Because Justice Breyer, by the way, was the one who wrote the dissent here. Yeah. And a little side story, a little side note for some of your listeners is the liberals want Justice Breyer to retire like yesterday. Because like, hey, you're a little long in the tooth.
Right.
Really appreciate all the help.
And frankly, you're not crazy enough for us. We need someone even crazier than you to become a justice.
That used to be the subtext, but now that's just like the text.
Yeah.
That's right. But so here's how they justified it. And your listeners can't see this, but on page 6 of the dissent,
Oh my gosh.
So it's literally the graph of COVID spread. Okay. And they basically say, look, COVID's still spreading. And boy, it looks like there's another wave here. And as long as there's another wave, this is a pretty broad law. And it says whatever other measures he may seem necessary. And this is an emergency. And that's basically it. And the scary part of it is it's basically the same justification you've seen out of a lot of public health authorities for all sorts of power grabs that we've had over the last few months.
Oh, it feels a lot like, too, and this is not just in this matter, but it feels like on the other side of the ideological aisle here, that as long as your motivations are pure and true, mm-hmm. how you get there is irrelevant. Like right. the words on the paper are law if you need them to be, but they're just sort of suggestions yeah. otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, and in fairness to the minority, you know, to the three dissenting justices, I will say they try and build and I think the best that they can do is build like a little house of cards, but they try and point to in the CDC's order, it says, hey, don't worry, this doesn't apply to everybody. It's only people who have nowhere else to live. Right. So, I mean, if they tell you that, hey, I'm not paying rent, because, you know, I don't want to. And, you know, by the way, I've got another apartment across town where I am paying rent.
Yeah.
Then you can go ahead and evict them.
And that's how people will do it. They'll tell you.
And if we fine you, don't worry. As long as you can prove that the person had somewhere else to live after a years long court battle, your fines will be reversed. That's what they pointed to, is that they said the order's not nearly as sweeping as people say. It's incredibly sweeping.
Yeah, look, and for those who are out there who are like, but look, what about the human tragedy here, families being a bit, I don't disagree with that, but I think Chris's bigger point is, and the Supreme Court's earlier in June was, Congress, do something about this. Mm-hmm. Please don't let this turn into, as long as we can just come up with a good outcome, we can find any vehicle to get there. Like, that's not how we do it in America.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, it's increasingly how we're doing it in America. And I think that's why the Supreme Court acted so quickly on this. Because I think Kavanaugh and Roberts are sitting there saying, and say what you will about them, but I think they both feel, you know, ill-used,
yeah.
right? That they tried to extend a courtesy, and what did they get for it? Their hand bitten off.
Would it be fair to say then that the Biden administration intentionally engaged in lawless behavior?
I think they did. I mean, so I absolutely, and I don't say that lightly, but if you remember unfortunately, August has been a really awful month,
and it's been
an awful month for the country, and it's been an awful month for the Biden administration.
Yeah.
But it started off really bad with this eviction moratorium, because what did President Biden say? Yeah, I mean, we pretty much know it's unconstitutional. Basically, everybody told us it was unconstitutional. But, you know, then we gave a couple cocktails to Larry Tribe up at Harvard,
right.
and he told us that maybe it would be okay. So we decided to go ahead with it. I mean, that's, you know, that it's funny at one level, but this is a president, right? And they take an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution, too. Not just justices, not just the Congress, right? The president takes that oath. And he basically said, Constitution be damned. I know it'll probably get thrown out, but maybe we'll get a few weeks of lawlessness where we can benefit our constituents. And I mean, not to be dramatic about it, but like that way lies things like Caesarism. I mean, that is
unbelievable.
It is not the way that you should run this country.
All the worst fears that were expressed about President Trump, this is part of that notion. Like, I'm not bound by the law. I'm bound by what good ideas I have. We get some minutes left, and I just want to go through this with you. Chris Murray talking with us from Brownstein, but also you are the wartime conciliary for the state GOP. Not so much Tom Hayden, but the other one, whoever became the wartime conciliary, you know, from The Godfather.
Yeah.
We have a small...
As long as I'm not Fredo.
Right. No, my God, not yet. Let's see how this thing plays out on the 18th. There is a small battle brewing internal to the party about whether or not to withdraw from the state's open primary that was the product of a 2016 election that only took effect in 2018. And so I've taken one position on this publicly on the radio and also in the Denver Post. And the guy that comes after me, Liberty Esquire, Randy Corcoran, takes a very different position. And he's also got a piece that's going to come out in the Denver Post hopefully soon. He's just one of the busiest guys out there. But what I wanted to do is, and I know you wouldn't and couldn't weigh in on whether it's good or it's bad, I want to talk about the mechanism for it and what the practical ramifications are for this, that, and the other. So first off, if the Republican Party wanted to opt out of the open primary, do they have the ability to do it? And if so, how?
Okay, so the Republican Party, both major political parties have the ability to opt out of Colorado's primary election. Now, I'm going to say have the ability. It is a hard thing to do, right? So the ability is there. I think folks who are for this would probably say, but man, is the deck stacked against us. And
it's like beyond supermajority.
It
right?
is. It's 75%. And so 75% of the entire state central committee, not 75% of the people at the meeting, right? The 75% of the total number, total voting members of the state central committee have to vote for an opt out. If they do that, and they do that before October 1 of this year, so 2021, because it's the year before an election year, then the Republican Party is, at all levels, is out of the primary election and chooses its candidates by convention.
Now, talk to us about what does that mean and what does that look like, and then who then participates, whether it's for a county commissioner or for governor or U.S. Senate. Who then is making this decision?
Well, I mean, so again, if you... As far as who's making the decision to opt out, that is the state central committee. Okay, so the state central committee is made up of elected officials, county officers, right, and things called bonus members, which are awarded based on basically the population of your county and the number of votes that you've cast for Republican officials in the past.
I'm an executive committee member by virtue of being the representative from the 4th Congressional District. That's Ken Buck's district. Am I in that central committee?
You're an executive committee member of the 4th Congressional District?
Yep.
You, unless you're a bonus member also, you are not on the Central Committee.
I better be. I'm going to figure out a way to make myself one.
Yeah, no, man, unless the 4th CD's bylaws make you a Central Committee member.
It's always about the bylaws.
It is. Yeah. It is. But by default, you're not.
So let's say then the Central Committee does this this vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said 75% of the members. It's down in Pueblo, right, on September the 18th.
Correct.
That's not next door.
Well, it's not next door for us. But I mean,
No, for us. Yeah, yeah. I'm saying and for most of the people listening. Yeah. But so... The attendance matters, right? Because if somehow I'm making this up, but let's say only 50% of the central, how many members of the central committee are there?
Well, we're just over I should have that number. I don't have it, but it's over 500.
Okay, so we need 75%. That is, I've got horrible math skills, but that tells me that it's somewhere around 375, right?
Right. Yep.
So if only 300 people show up, it's over.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, because you got to, unless you do your proxy, I guess.
Right. Show up, and that's either in person or by proxy. But I'll say, you know, the party put, the reason this law is here is because the voters adopted an initiative back in 2016, I think
that's right.
That created this open primary and forced this upon both parties. And to protect themselves constitutionally, the folks who put this through said, oh, but don't worry, you can opt out as long as you like complete this Herculean task. Our Democratic friends, I don't think, have ever had a vote on this. In the Republican Party, past leadership in the party and past central committees, passed a bylaw amendment that requires a vote on this at the fall meeting before an election year
every time. Oh, wow.
Unless you don't have 75% of the committee in attendance, right?
Okay.
Because if the vote won't work, then there's no reason to have the vote. So far, in the two times we've tried to do it, there have not, and when I say tried to do it, I just mean try to have that vote.
Yeah.
There has not been 75% of the committee in attendance.
Wow. So. Procedurally speaking, without weighing in on the validity of the argument or how it would do, could this be a prelude to what you sort of hinted at earlier, which is it is set up to be nearly impossible to achieve? Is there a legal, I guess, attack for the process saying it's unconstitutional because whether you said 75% or 80% or 100%, it all functions the same. There's no way to undo this.
Yeah, I mean, so that is the $64,000 question. And I think there probably is. I mean, it's a close thing. I mean, courts have said that, you know, political parties are not entitled, for example, in states that have adopted the top two primary, right, where it doesn't matter what party you're in, right, just the top two vote getters, totally open primary. The Supreme Court said that's a thumbs up.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So you can do that. But here, where you're leaning on the party infrastructure, like Colorado made the choice, we don't want a top two primary.
Right.
We still want major political parties, and we want separate primary elections. There may be a challenge there, but I think to set it up, the first thing that would have to happen is you'd have to have at least a majority of the Central Committee, say, like, you know, we want this, right? So now you've got a majority of the decision-making body of the party saying, give me that convention, right? That's how I want to nominate. But you're short of the 75%. Yeah, there might be an avenue there.
Are we going to see you down there in Pueblo on the 18th?
Oh, any chance I get to go down to Pueblo,
I know.
Myself a slopper at the Coors Tavern?
The food, the food's ridiculous.
It's great. Yeah.
Thank you for coming in studio. Chris Murray, super attorney. Buddy, I could talk to you all day because you just know stuff. Thank you for sitting in.
Oh, well. It's my pleasure to pretend to be intelligent on your show, George.
Listen, given the people in this room right now, you don't have to try that hard. You sound super smart.
So I hope it didn't seem like I was.
Good luck on the hand model rebirth career on that. Chris Murray from Brownstein and the state GOP. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jake Ward talking about a little tech antitrust issues. Until that time, George Brockler on The George Show at 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on The George Show, 710 KNUS, going right to our, well, I was hoping we were going right to our VIP line. We've got Jake Ward, who should be calling in now. Let me see if I can't find his number during a break. Listen, we had Chris Murray in here, and happy to take some phone calls on this, by the way. As you sit there and listen, I got a couple questions for you. One, we had Chris Murray from Brownstein, and he's also the state party attorney, and gave us a pretty factual analysis of what was going on with this opt-out thing on the primary. And some of you listening may be like, I just simply don't care. I don't care about the Republican Party. I don't care about their inner workings or how they pick their candidates. Others of you might be. And so to the extent that you've listened to my show and you've listened to Randy, and Randy does such a smart, impassioned job of talking about the need right now to opt out of this open primary, happy to have that discussion with you at 303-696-1971, or you can, of course, text us from the app or the website as well. I think for me, one of the things, and I do my best to listen to the town halls that they put on and to really consider the things that they've said, and they've got, you know, good conservatives on there that I listen to and I've worked with on other things, whether it's Randy or Chuck Bonnewell, and everyone knows Chuck from the radio here, and his great wife, Julie. Dave Williams down south, there's a bunch of others. One of the things that I have heard them say is, and this is in response to an argument I've made, I'm not the originator of it, that, look, it doesn't make sense for us to limit the number of Republicans who pick our party standard bearers to a mere 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 of the most intense, hard-charging grassroots folks. That doesn't make sense to cut off the access to making their opinions known to the other, I don't know, 99.6% of registered Republicans in the state of Colorado. And the response has been, and I appreciate that they want to respond to this, they need to, is, well, look, we can definitely use modern technology and all sorts of procedural things to make sure that we give every registered Republican who wants to the opportunity to participate in this. Okay, even if I believe that that's possible, and it might be, I think it could be. That's not what you get when you opt out. And so here's what bugs me about the way we're postured right now. What we're postured to do is opt us out because we say it's so bad. The alternative is a big question mark. Because right now the alternative is a convention, which is what Chris Murray talked about. It's converting our state assembly into a convention where a handful of the hardest charging, most committed Republicans, the grassroots folks, make the decision for the other 99.6% of Republicans in the state of Colorado. That's what we get. And so what we're being told is, trust us. Trust us. We'll come up with a way to include everybody else. All we have to do first, though, is opt out. First opt us out, and then we'll work on getting you all involved. And I got to tell you, respectfully, it feels a little bit like let's make a deal, where they're like, here, on the one hand, here is the Chevy Volt or whatever it is. And you're like, okay, I'm not a huge fan of the Chevy Volt. It gets me from point A to point B. It's the car that I have. And they're like, give up the Chevy Volt and take what's behind door number two. Door number two could be a great F-150, one of the new ones. Or it could be some beat-to-crap, rusty old Schwinn bike. We don't know. But you got to guess. All you know for sure is you're giving up the Chevy Volt. Don't know what you're going to get on the other side. I don't like that. That's not America. America doesn't make you go into a car lot and say, do you want car number A with all these details or some surprise car? And we'll tell you after you make your decision. In fact, it feels a little Pelosi-esque. You remember that when Pelosi said you got to vote on the bill to get to know what's in it? This feels a lot like you've got to reject the current system for us to even start to have a conversation about what the next system will look like. I don't think that's fair. And I don't think that's right. I think if you're going to ask Republicans to make a decision about rejecting one thing for another, be dang specific about what the other thing is. Come to the table with a specific set of plans. And there's still time to do this, man. This thing isn't until the 18th. A precise set of plans that you are going to offer at that moment when this thing happens. And it's going to lay out with detail. This is how we're going to include the opportunity for every Republican to participate in a way that is both constitutional and, hell, just plain old legal. And then say, reject what we have for this, not reject what we have for the possibility of something better. Because right now, if nothing is agreed upon, we reject the current system. We cut off all the right-leaning unaffiliateds who may be even more conservative than the Republican Party itself, as well as 99.6% of other Republicans, so that 4,000 people, maybe 5,000, hell, maybe even blow it up to 10,000. Who cares? 10,000 Republicans get to make the decision for everybody else when right now all those everybody else's have a voice? That doesn't make sense to me. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Listen, 303-696-1971, maybe you disagree. You can also text us as well. We've got the calls starting to light up right now. As soon as Javi gets this thing fired up, we're going to put on... It's obviously somebody who thinks they're ordering a pizza. I'm interested in hearing what you think about whether we should opt in or opt out of this particular procedure. In the end, I'll be clear. I don't like the fact that people that aren't on our team get to pick our team captains. I don't like it. But that's the status of the law. And I heard somebody ask me this the other day at a breakfast. I was at the Highlands Ranch GOP breakfast. Great attendance yesterday. Monica Wasen does a great job. And one of the questions was, well, I've heard that the Democrats already have a closed primary. We're the only ones stuck with this. I don't know where someone hears that. That is absolute nonsense. The Dems are stuck with the exact same procedure that we have. They just haven't chosen to go down this road. There may be some internal reasons why they don't, but I think they'd love to see the Republicans charge up this hill. They would love to see the Republicans cede the field when it comes to unaffiliated voters who might be active enough they want to participate in a primary but are cut off from one party to the benefit of the other. Now, at the end of the day, if we think that these 4,000, maybe up to 10,000 hard-charging Republicans at an assembly are going to pick candidates that can win statewide, and we think that that's the outcome of this, yeah, it's worth having the conversation, because at the end of the day, whether it's Randy Corcoran, whether it's me, whether it's Jimmy Sengenberger or Dave Williams, our goals are the same. When it comes to the GOP, we want the GOP to win. And whatever path provides us the best opportunity to win, that's the one that I want. But if all of this is about, hey, we just don't like the idea that squish R's or soft R's or Chamber of Commerce R's are playing a financial role in helping decide these candidates, and we just don't like the ideological choices of our Republicans that make these decisions, I disagree. I don't think that's the purpose of any system shouldn't be to find the most conservative people in it to generate the candidates. If that's the mood of the party, if that's the sense of the party, and I think the Republican Party is largely conservative, then those are the results that we should get. But not trying to create a system where we can limit the number of participants to only those who have a certain ideological bent. I just don't agree with that. We're going to get to the phone lines here right now. John, you're on 710 KNUS. John, what do you think?
You might go flying.
Hey, John.
Yes, good morning.
Hey, good morning. You're on.
All right. I'm out for my walk this morning. Pardon my...
Oh, great. Great weather for it. Tell me what you think.
Well, I have a couple of questions, impertinent questions. The first one is... The benefactors of this, of withdrawing us from the primary process, believe that there shouldn't be people who are not part of the party who are taking part in our primary. I understand that.
Yeah.
However,
me
my
too.
Question is, where's the beef? Where's the proof? What candidates have been chosen in the primary because of the efforts of unaffiliated voters?
Such a great question, John, and I will take up the answer that I think that the other side would give, because I've heard them give this in some of these town halls. They would point to one race in particular, although I think this happened in five separate races. Justin Everett, who's a friend, super constitutional conservative. Nobody doubts his conservative or constitutional credentials and experience. But he was in a primary against Colin Larson, who was our current House member out of South Jeffco. And in fact, it was Justin's old seat, and he was running for election after having sat out a term. And in the primary, a ton of money came in from the third party side to help Colin, and, you know, to the exclusion, I guess, of Justin. And Colin won. So Colin Larson became the party nominee. He ends up winning. And so the side that wants to really reduce down the access to voters and who picks this to just the people in the Republican Party, but they'd be content if it was just a handful of assembly goers, honestly. They look at that and say, do you see, there's proof that there's outside money. And they say it's outside liberal, Democrat, progressive, George Soros money. I don't think there's any proof of that. That's where I want to see the proof, is show me that the liberals are playing in our primaries. And the response that I've heard most is, well, Terrence Carroll said so. Terrence Carroll said they are. Boom, proof. That's proof of nothing. That statement means nothing. Show me where. A study. Show me some money that's been spent on behalf of someone to do that. Otherwise, what it sounds like is there's outside money coming in, but it could be outside Republican money who just isn't as conservative as Justin is conservative, or they like Colin for other reasons. I don't know. But that doesn't bum me out. What bums me out is that we've tried to create a boogeyman or a straw man and say, and based on that, we want to exclude 99.6% of the Republican Party so that a handful of people who are no doubt conservative, hard-charging grassroots conservatives, that those folks get to pick our candidates because we think we're going to come up with a better product. Anyway, that's a long-winded answer. But, John, does that answer your question to some extent?
That does. That does. But do you have time for a second one?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you.
Go ahead.
We thank you very much. I'm trying to collect my thoughts there. We have a, in most counties, most districts in Colorado, Republicans and Democrats are either both minorities or close to it compared to unaffiliated voters. Don't we risk, number one, not getting name recognition for these unaffiliated voters who are interested in our primary, not getting name recognition of the candidates? Number two, aren't we risking telling these people that, hey, we need your vote, but we don't care what you have to say?
Well, that's exactly what I wrote down in this column that I had published by the Denver Post, and Randy's going to have a response one coming up. I do think there's some of that, right? Like, I don't think that's the strongest argument for why we don't do it, but it's a damn good argument, right? Like, there are going to be ballots that go out to people that would want to participate in our primary because they are R-leaning U's, Republican-leaning unaffiliated voters, and maybe they're even super conservative. Like, they don't like the Republican Party because it's not conservative enough. They want to have a voice in this process, too. And what we'd be saying is, because we worry about the squishes and the softs and the lefts playing in this without any evidence, by the way, of that, other than the outcome of that primary that I talked about, we're just going to cut off everybody else. That doesn't make practical sense to me.
Not only does that not make practical sense, we are changing our party from the big tent to the small tent. And I would postulate we need the big tent to win and turn things around here in Colorado.
I do think we need a big tent, and I do think that we can still nominate good, electable, conservative candidates without having to circle the wagons and pull it all in. John, thank you so much for the phone call. Enjoy the walk. Great weather for it. Let's go to Don. Don, you're on 710 KNUS.
I hate the term big tent, but I'm going to take your side and basically say that this attempt by the Republican Party in Colorado is basically cutting off their nose, and I think Peter Boyles would be on your side as well as this. I mean, let's be honest. Most people right now, I mean, are Democrats in the state of Colorado. There are more independents than there are Republicans, and this is a bad omen for the Republican Party. You know, and it's no wonder that this thing passed. Now, I do think in primaries, most of the time, I think the party should be able to control it to an extent, and if you're unaffiliated, you should be left out. But what the Republican Party is trying to do is really going to cut off a lot of people and shut out a lot of people, and it's going to basically they'll be digging their own grave and putting themselves in it. We should change the Constitution to get it back to what it was once.
Well, and Don, that won't happen, as you know, because so many voters, and it was like, you know, back in 2016, I think it was a 54-46 or 53-47 outcome. That's a pretty good margin anymore in politics. I don't think that unaffiliated voters are going to say, please cut us out.
And with the growing uniparty, you know, I mean, people don't want to be associated with a political party that hates them. And the Republican Party hates their base more than the Democrats hate theirs.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but let me ask you this, Don. Does it resonate with you, though, this idea that it's offensive to suggest that people that have no stake in a party, like they refuse to wear the jersey, they don't want to register as a Republican, should get to have a say in who that Republican Party's leadership is? And the same for the Democrat side.
I think you should have skin in the game, but I'm just saying in Colorado, I mean, the Colorado Republicans have screwed the pooch so many times, this is what we wind up with.
Well, and I think...
And I'm taking advantage of it, believe me, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm with you that the remedy, it's more like a poison than an actual resolution.
I could get more on board with this if we had an actual, definitive, this is going to happen plan. This isn't
and
this
I would
for
agree
that.
With you. I mean, you know,
this is this for question mark.
If you can't prove that, if you're making remarks that George Soros is involved and there's no proof, then it's no different than people screaming that Biden's people stole the election. There's yet to be any proof of that, and basically Peter Boyles is being proven correct on that issue that Trump got clipped.
Don, thank you for this phone call. Thanks for listening, always. Thanks, man. George Brockler, still with you here until we cut away for a break, and then I'll come back after the break. That's just how radio works. I'd love to continue this conversation with you at 303-696-1971. Until that time, though, you're listening to me, George Brockler, on The George Show at 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS. Taking us to the top of the hour will be our last call so far, unless another one comes in on this topic, our last call of the morning. No, I'm joking. Just for the 7 o'clock hour from Lakewood, my hometown. Joan, you're on. Joan, what do you think? Hello, Joan. Oh my gosh. Joan, are you there? Javi, I think we have lost Joan. Joan, give us a call back if you have a moment. 303-696-1971. We had you on there for just a second. By the way, I want to tell you, unless this is could be a misspelling. Clever spelling of Joan, J-O-N-E. I think that was just Javi going super phonetic or something like that. Listen, as we talk about what's coming up for 2022, I want to tell you that I think that this year, kind of regardless of what takes place with this decision on the 18th, and my prediction is it's going to fail. I think, one, we're not going to have enough people at this meeting to make a 75% vote. But even if we do, I don't think you're going to get unanimity on it. I don't think you're going to get 75% of the membership, but you could get over 50%, and that's interesting. This could be a prelude to a next battle in a courtroom. Hey, is that Joan back on? Okay. Hey, Joan, you're on 710 KNUS for whatever reason. Joan? Sweet goodness. Joan, you must be in Parker, Colorado, because that's where I live, and Verizon hates Parker, Colorado. Joan, give us another call, 303-696-1971, unless you need more coins to put into the payphone, and we'll have to have someone drive by and give those things to you. Or you can call Collect. Javi will take it. I think 2022 is going to be a good year regardless. And I say that because the way things are going, and for all the wrong reasons, the way things are going in America right now when it comes to the handling of COVID, the fact that Afghanistan, at least the evacuation from it, has been, I'm not going to say an unmitigated disaster, but it's been a disastrous here in the last week. And my hope is, my prayer, it's more than hope, it's a prayer that not a single other American gets hurt or abandoned who wants to come home before that August 31st arbitrarily chosen deadline. I just want to see no more Americans get hurt, and then we can reevaluate what takes place after that. But the idea that we're working with the Taliban, I mean, can you imagine saying that out loud 3 years ago, 4 years ago? And that the Taliban is doing battle with ISIS-K, and that somehow this makes the Taliban, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to end up doing. Listen, I think Joan's on line one. I'm going to take one more stab at it. Joan, you're on 710 KNUS.
George.
Boom! You made it! You made it! You've got a couple minutes.
I am in favor of closing the primary.
How come?
And it has to do with...
And by the way, it's not closing the primary. It's just withdrawing from the current open primary. It doesn't close it. It just reduces it down.
I know. It reduces
just to the assembly. Yeah.
But here's the reason.
Yeah, tell me.
I am part of the party. And as a member of the party, I walk. I do phone calls. I do all sorts of things for candidates. I am part of the base. Unaffiliated rarely come in and do anything.
What does that mean? They rarely come in and do anything in what?
As far as supporting a candidate.
Well, and again, you're probably right in terms of, I don't know, showing up for rallies and mailers and maybe even writing checks. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know they vote. They're the largest voting bloc out there.
And I'm just saying, you know, there people will say that this argument is like a pay-to-play kind of argument, that you need to be there to support before you get to have a voice.
Don't you think that if you had the option, you would have every registered Republican have the opportunity to vote on candidates? Or do you think it should be even more narrow than that?
No, I think every registered Republican should vote on candidates. Yes.
Okay, and just then, but that will not happen if we opt out of the primary. If we opt out of the primary, we cut off 99.6% of all registered Republicans.
No, that's not true. Because there are all sorts of different ways of doing it. We don't have to do it by, we don't need to be dictated how we do it.
Yeah, but which
we can have caucuses.
We could, and there may be an opportunity to do 8 million things. Which one are we going to do? What's the promise that's going to get every Republican involved? And that's my concern, is that it's the unknown. It's like, let's get out of this system, and then we'll figure something out later.
Oh, so that's the Biden thing in Afghanistan? Objecting to?
No. Hey, listen. If you're saying what the Republicans that want to opt out are taking the approach from Biden and Pelosi, I don't disagree that there's some of that there. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just mean you're offering Republicans in the Central Committee a choice between a known and an unknown. Like, oh, we'll get it figured out. We got plenty of options. We'll get it figured out. And it's like, what? How about figure it out now?
And the thing is I've looked at the past 10 years and things are going down the tube. There are all sorts of graphs and all sorts of things that show that this is our death deal, and if we don't change it, and you can say, well, you need a plan or something, you know, but I have faith.
Joan, I appreciate that, and I love that you listen and that you call in, and I love our conversations together. I'll say this. 10 years, you're right. Republican registration has taken a huge, huge crash in terms of numbers. But we've only had the open primary since 2018, so it can't be because of that. There are other issues at play there. Hey, listen, got to cut away for the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll get a little bit of news, hopefully a little bit of Phil Hartig, and then I'll keep talking to you here at 710 KNUS. You keep those numbers ready, 303-696-1971. Until that time, my name is George Brockler. This is The George Show.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.